Welcome to the old school meeting of Overeaters Anonymous, featuring speakers with long-term abstinence. This meeting was born online, and it's going to stay that way. That means you can attend live on Tuesday evenings at 6:30 Pacific. And now, our speaker.
It is now time for me to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I am like now, including how and why I stay abstinent today. My name is Kim, and I am a compulsive overeater in recovery. I'm also a lot of things I didn't know before I got here to the program of Overeaters Anonymous. I'm a binge eater. I'm an exercise bulimic. I'm a restrictor. I'm an insane person around certain alcoholic foods and food behaviors. So I'm grateful to be here with all of you. My abstinence date is November 13th of 2010, and I'm down about 80 pounds from my top weight. And just grateful to God, even though I'm still an insane person, to be living in a normal, healthy body. I got to Kansas City where I grew up today. I flew in this morning, and my best friend of 40 years picked me up at the airport, and he's gained a bunch of weight. And the first thing he talked about was his weight. And the first thing I used to talk about was my weight. I had to talk about my weight before you had a chance to talk about my weight. I had to tell fat jokes about myself and bring it up before you had a chance to. And I'm just grateful it's not the entire focus of every waking moment of my life. How much I weigh, what clothes are going to fit, who saw me, what do I look like from behind in this outfit? What did I eat? What did you see me eat? Can I get more to eat? And what size are my clothes? How many grams of fat is in that? I sucked at math. That's why I majored in journalism in college. But math was my life when I was in the food, counting calories that I took in, counting calories I burned on treadmills, what size my clothes were. Like, everything was an equation. And it doesn't work. Like, a normal person has to burn more calories than they eat to lose weight. It seems like a simple equation, but as a compulsive overeater, that doesn't work for me. And I just filled out an application to do some volunteer work for an organization that helps people understand different types of discrimination. And I had to write about the types of discrimination I've faced as a compulsive overeater. And when I was filling it out, I realized no one marginalized me more than I marginalized myself. My entire value was based on how much I weighed, what you thought of how much I weighed, and how successful I was white knuckling the latest diet. And you know, I didn't understand growing up that I had body dysmorphia. You know, I in high school, I'm not a little curvy, wispy girl, and I thought I was hideous and obese, and I look at pictures from high school, and there was nothing wrong with me. It was all in my head. Later, it was not all in my head. It was all in my head and my body. And, you know, college is really where the yo-yo dieting started. You know, I gained the freshman 15 and lost that, and then gained the sophomore 50 and joined a gym class. And I yo-yo dieted up and down. You know, first it was 30 or 40 pounds, then it was 80 or 90 pounds over and over and over again. And I'm a really, really good dieter. What it was like was, okay, I'm going back to Weight Watchers today. Okay, I'm starting the cabbage soup diet today. Okay, I'm doing the Body for Life body transformation contest. Okay, I'm going to be a competitive bodybuilder. Like, I could start anything. And I was convinced that if I just had the right diet plan, the right food plan, and the right exercise workout regimen, that I could be successful. Because that's what society tells us. Just have some willpower and do this or do that, and you too can be thin. And a lot of things work for a lot of people, but as a compulsive eater, there are certain alcoholic foods and food behaviors that kick in a craving and obsession that once I trigger, I cannot control. And my bottom line abstinence is no sweets, no recreational sugar. If it looks like dessert, it is none of my business. My birthday is tomorrow. And my dad, when we were driving home today, said, oh, I got you an ice cream cake and you and Claire, my little niece, can have your, and he knows I can't, I mean, he knows I don't eat that, but now I don't have to be upset about it. Like everybody else can have it. It's not my food. It's a movie prop. It looks pretty in the pictures, but it's not my food. Because if I could have a pinky out with a little dessert fork and have a little bit, I would have a little bit. But we all know I can't have a little bit. I'll shove people in the floor, eat the whole thing, be mad, go get on a treadmill for 7 hours trying to burn it off and hate myself and hate everybody else. So being back home in Kansas City, I've lived in LA for 20 years, and being back here where all of my insecurities and traumas and everything happened, where my compulsive overeating started to ease the anxiety and the pain, is really emotional. And it's, you know, today it's emotional more in good ways than painful ways. I mean, it's painful that we lost my mom to ALS 5.5 years ago and she's not here when I walk in the house. But it's joyful that my niece is bringing her baby, my grandniece, over tomorrow and she's 6 months old, that my dad invited my friend, you know, my best friend and my beloved family over to celebrate my birthday tomorrow. And that it can be about the friends and family and not about the food. That, you know, recovery birthdays, I'm always so grateful. Like, I'm grateful to be in a healthy body and down 80 pounds and not self-obsessed and self-deprecating and out of my mind. But natal birthdays bring up a lot of insecurity. You know, I'm going to be 57, and am I going to be single forever? And I wish I weighed 10 pounds less, and you know, I should have more money saved for retirement. Like, all the judgment comes up on natal birthdays. But today I got here and I was just like, oh, I get to spend it with my family and my friends, enjoying their company. And, you know, there's extra shame in my food addiction, in being a compulsive overeater. Like, I have a very addictive brain and personality, and anything that can take me out of my feelings, I want more of. But not everybody knew I drank or used drugs, or I chain smoked, or I was promiscuous, or I spent money I didn't have. But everybody knew I was out of control with food, because, you know, my size 20 dress was leaving abrasions in my waistband, you know, in my waist, because the band was too tight. And I know part of that is personal, but part of that is societal too. There's definitely fat shaming in our society, but no one shamed me more than I shame myself. So there was a time that I could diet and be successful, but then I would always eventually start gaining the weight back. And by the time I got to Overeaters Anonymous, the food wasn't working anymore. It just wasn't working anymore. And I had been working the steps in another program for 10 years as clearly and as honestly as I could, with a family-sized bag of nacho cheese Doritos and a 2-pound bag of peanut M&Ms in my lap, you know? And I did the best I could. And I'm grateful for that recovery. Those of you that started with the food, I am in awe of you. Like, to rip this Band-Aid off, you know, you guys told me if I wanted to know why I was eating, to stop eating, and I would find out. And that is exactly my experience. And I'm not a compulsive overeater because I don't have any willpower, or I'm weak, or it's a moral issue. I'm a compulsive overeater because I'm an addict. And those foods and food behaviors kick off a craving and obsession out of my control. And I didn't want to need a second program when I came to Overeaters Anonymous. Don't you know, I'd already been working the steps for 10 years of being of service and all the good things. but my credits didn't transfer. And food is my primary addiction. I was running out of the house after dark, chasing the ice cream truck when I wasn't supposed to be out of the house after dark because I was so little. I used, you know, Little Debbie's and Twizzlers to numb the pain. And I have so much love and compassion for the little girl I was now, because I didn't know that I had panic anxiety disorder or social anxiety disorder. Like, little kids should not have a sense of impending doom. Oh my God, it's going to be terrible. What's going to happen? They're going to ask me a question. I'm going to look stupid. And I mean, that's the way my brain is wired. That's the way that I work without some recovery. And I came to Overeaters Anonymous and dove into the steps like my life depended on it, because it did. When I got here, I was on two antidepressants. I was on acid reflux medication for GERD. I had pelvic prolapse from gaining and losing so much weight so many times. The gynecologist asked me how many babies I'd had and was very puzzled when I said no babies. And I can see now high blood pressure. Like, that's also hereditary, but it was really high. It was really high. And then I would take diet supplements that were speed on top of blood pressure medication. I'm really, really blessed that I didn't give myself a stroke, you know, with some of the games that I played with supplements. And I have tried every diet, every supplement, every workout plan on the planet. So if there's something you haven't tried that you're curious about, just ask me and I can tell you about it. I have a little resentment right now that everybody with money's on Ozempic and losing weight without trying hard. But I'll probably be able to get over it. What I love about Overeaters Anonymous is we get to choose our own higher power, and then we have to be honest about what our bottom line abstinence is. In my other program, I didn't tell you what I could and couldn't drink. In OA, I have to be honest about what I can and cannot eat. And one of my friends the other day said, you know, her sponsor had her do red, yellow, and green light foods, and then said, oh, don't eat yellow or red light foods. And I thought that was brilliant, because if I'm not negotiating with any foods, there are foods that sometimes I can eat out once in a while, and other times get a little too sexy and I'm thinking about the next time I get to have it. And it doesn't make me blow my abstinence. It just takes up space in my head. I don't want to be thinking about the next time I get to eat it, or whatever it is. And working the steps in Overeaters Anonymous, the first time I did an inventory, my first sponsor said, oh, you're a people pleaser with low self-esteem. I was like, what? No, I'm not. I just want everyone to like me. Like, I had no idea, like, how little I settled for in so many situations. And a big part of my recovery in Overeaters Anonymous is treating myself with the same love and respect that I learned to treat others with, working the steps in another program, and standing up for myself if something doesn't work for me, because that is a lot of what I pushed down with the food. Like, not feeling like I had a voice, not feeling respected. And in recovery from food addiction, I'm a lot better at standing up for myself. I came in for the vanity. I wanted to get the weight off. I wanted to keep the weight off, because I'd never kept the weight off. And I didn't realize how much work I still needed to do when I got here. You know, childhood trauma came up. The people pleasing came up. It got me back into therapy. Like, there's always another layer for me to discover, uncover, discard, and move forward. And in Overeaters Anonymous, anytime I'm resistant to giving up, whether it's a food or a food behavior, whatever comfortable pattern I've been in forever, I don't want to give up anything else. And I'll kick and scream. And then once I finally give it over to God, there's always more freedom on the other side. There is always relief on the other side. And I think, why didn't I do that sooner? And I didn't do it sooner because I wasn't ready to do it sooner. I wasn't willing to do it sooner. And I have some twisted belief, even still some days, that like God, everything going on in the world, God is busy. God has a lot going on. Why would God care about what's on my plate or what I'm putting in my mouth? And I think that I should be able to figure out and control my food. And that's insanity. Yet God absolutely doesn't want me to harm myself with food. God absolutely wants me to be healthy, happy, joyous, and free in recovery in Overeaters Anonymous. And I love sponsoring other women in Overeaters Anonymous and walking them through the steps and seeing the freedom in their lives unfold. I love being of service in Overeaters Anonymous, and I speak whenever someone asks me to speak if I'm available. We did comedy at the birthday party. It was a blast. For a couple of years, I was the San Fernando Valley special events and fundraiser chair. That was a great time. If any of you are in the Valley, we need a special events and fundraiser chair on that board right now for this year. But whenever I think I don't have time or it's too, I can't take another sponsee. I don't have time. You know, oh, I can't. Someone from Orange County called and asked if I would come to San Diego and speak at a meeting. And I was like, I can't drive to San Diego and speak at a meeting. Well, it's on a Saturday morning. I can make a day of it and maybe have one of you ride shotgun with me and go down to San Diego and spend the day with some of my fellows down there. I met them on Zoom and loved them. Why not go see them in person? San Diego's beautiful. It's funny. I'm not afraid of taking a drink or doing a drug or picking up a cigarette. Like there are a lot of things I'm not afraid of with my addictive personality anymore. I have a healthy fear of my alcoholic foods and alcoholic food behaviors because I am just one bite. I'm like this far away from kicking in the craving and the obsession, burning my life to the ground. And I think
1 minute.
Thank you. I can gain 60 pounds in 4 months. That's the way I roll. I am a binge eater. I am a hardcore binge eater. And if I don't respect my abstinence, then I could be in trouble really fast. I love Overeaters Anonymous that we get to support each other. Other people in the world don't understand food addiction and honestly don't want help until we get here. I'm so grateful that I finally surrendered to Overeaters Anonymous and told you I didn't know anything about staying sober with food, that I cried and had panic attacks and wanted to run out of the first few meetings that I was in because I knew how big this thing was to me. I'm so grateful for my recovery. I'm so grateful for my healthy body. And I'm so grateful that all of you help keep me on the beam each and every day of my life, so that I can go out there and live a big, beautiful life because I'm abstinent and because of Overeaters Anonymous. So thank you all for letting me share.